Hello and welcome. We are on the air. I'm clinically trained success and happiness psychologist Alex George Subnosky, founder of FulfillingHappiness.com. And once again, thank you for joining me today on the Fulfilling Happiness Edge. Now, in case this is your very first time listening to the show, the primary focus of the Fulfilling Happiness Edge is to give you that extra advantage, that secret psychological edge that allows you to live your best professional and personal life and inspire others to do the same. The secondary focus is fun. Now, I do take my coaching and training very seriously, and I will be giving you cutting-edge personal development techniques in this show and in every show. But we will also be sharing a few fun, silly, out-of-the-box experiences along the way. Why? Because why not? That's what I think. So first of all, let me tell you about today's special guest interview. It will be with Eve Adamson, New York Times bestselling author and freelance writer who has written or co-authored over 50 books on self-development, psychology, stress management, Zen, cooking, holistic health, and more. In my interview with Eve, you're going to discover the three key considerations required to become successful in a new field. What she did to generate the internal pressure needed to go after her dreams, the one thing you must be confident about before becoming an entrepreneur, the specific process behind her most transformative life decision, and how to avoid the most common pitfalls of the new entrepreneur. After that, I'm going to give you my contribution. I like to theme the content of each show around my featured guest, so I'm going to reveal my how to build a business model around your passion process. This easy-to-follow four-step process will allow you and teach you how to develop your expertise by finding the best available training on your area of interest. How do we avoid all the charlatans and the junk out there and really get the training we need to be successful? That's what you will learn today. Also, at the end of today's show, I'm going to give you another incredible fantasy gift. I always give you a great fantasy gift and set the self-development challenge of the week. Now, to get the show started, each week, my co-host and I usually examine a major news story or theme. So before we get to the interview, I want to briefly introduce today's news story. Today's story is about publishing and the publishing industry. What's really interesting is even some of the most famous and successful people who have contacts and pre-established publishers across industries are starting to self-publish. Why the change? What is happening to information delivery? And what does this mean for you as a consumer and a potential entrepreneur? It's actually never been easier to become an entrepreneur, to create something and sell it. That, of course, doesn't mean it is easy to be successful. But to create something and sell it, or sell at least one, you know, thanks, Mum, that's really easy. We'll be talking about the pros and cons of these massive changes in just a couple of minutes. First, what I have to do is bring to the mic my co-pilot, a man who has written some of the greatest pieces of literature of all time, including Moby Duck and To Kill a Mockingbird. The maestro himself, music teacher, composer, true friend, and collaborator, James Love from MajorKeysToMusic.com. Welcome, James.
Hello, Alex. Thanks for those kind words on my fine pieces of literature there.
Did you like that? Yeah. So I think To Kill a Mockingbird, that's when like Lassie goes crazy, right? Is that the idea of that book? I can't remember.
Well, I don't want to give it away for everyone, but let's say Moby Duck. That's that, you know, the part where the duck and the dolphin and the whale get together, that's quite a nice part that people
sounds
could
awesome.
Look forward to. Yeah.
Wow, a duck, a whale. This sounds like a bar joke. So a duck, a whale, and a dolphin go into a...
Well, it's a satire, really.
Oh, okay. It's cerebral. That's what it is. Anything intelligent, you just call it cerebral. So we're playing around today because we're talking about publishing and we're kind of talking about literature because that's what I want to talk about in a very special news story that I'm just about to bring up. So hit it, maestro.
Don't dismay because it's in the news today.
And as usual, my voice was totally awesome. I just thought I'd mention that.
No auto-tune required.
None at all.
All natural.
Okay, we're talking about publishing because it's an important topic. I really want to get into this. So the digital world, the ease of piracy, the demand for instant accessibility, and the massive advantage that the mega companies have in controlling the market has changed publishing forever. Now, before we get into this, because there are pros and cons on each side, let's briefly talk about how this topic was inspired for today's show. As I said, today's show is a writing-based themed one, and I found a recent news story that was really interesting. So now, are you ready for this, James? I bet you've never thought I'd mention this. But hey, here's a surprise. What I want to talk about is uber-successful fiction writing megastar Jackie Collins.
Ooh. Okay, that's an interesting turn of the show.
Why? Well, because it's obvious that I'm into suspense novels that glamorize scandal, filth, depravity, and organized crime. I am a fan of all those things. Actually, that's not really true. See, the thing I want to talk about is because she decided to publish a book. So we have this person who's a mega star in the publishing world, obviously. And why has she self-published a book? It makes no sense. Everyone's out there trying to get a publisher. She has one. Very successful, and yet she's self-published. And so I came across this recent blog post about why she's doing this, and I found this to be really interesting. And what she says is, she knows that to stay successful, you have to be thinking two steps ahead of the game. And she, like many others, says that the book industry is going the way of the CD industry. And I think this will be interesting for you to talk about as well. Almost nobody buys CDs anymore. You know, we've got our music fix from things like iTunes. And more people are opting for ebooks over paper. For example, one of her books, The Goddess of Vengeance, she sold an equal amount of hardcovers and ebooks. And in England, she just bought the digital rights to one of her books called Lethal Seduction. And immediately it jumped to number 2 on the bestsellers list. And get this, the book is 10 years old. So she's republished it by herself, just digitally. And it's gone straight up to number 2 on the bestsellers list. And so what she says is, I've always been involved in the business side of my career. Even in the very beginning, I realized that I had to double check the things my publishers were doing. And what that really means is that no one's going to look after you more than you do. You know, it doesn't matter how good your support team is, you still have to look after yourself. And when it came to advertising, she says, I remember hounding them about what they were going to do for me once the book finally came out. What promotions are they buying? How long is the ad campaign? Is there a co-ops and author tour involved? And most first-time writers, and this could be in the fiction or non-fiction industry, when they finally get their book published, they throw a big party and then they stretch their head in bewilderment. And then they can't find their book in the bookstore. And so what this really gets down to is you've got to learn the rules of the game and be prepared to fight for what you want. And that's what she's always done. And what's interesting is, see, even if you have a publisher, the same rules apply. You've still got to fight for every inch, whether you have a publisher or not. So a lot of people are self-publishing because obviously there are benefits to self-publishing in terms of profit share that you're not going to get with a formal publisher. So I think what I'm going to do now is going to talk a little bit about what James thinks about all this. James.
Well, Alex, I mean, there's many things to say about this, really, but I think it's the same with the music industry as well, and all of these changes in the way that people actually consume the media are not necessarily bad for the people who are creating it. So the artists or the novelists, the authors in this case. Because really, it's just a shift in the way things work for the record industry or the publishing industry or whatever it is. It's a good thing, I think, that that authors or artists or whatever it happens to be actually realize that they do have to be independent or sort of fighting for their own thing from early on in the stages, because so many people are sort of slogging it out in the start and looking for that big break. And then when they finally do get it, they realize that it's not what it was cracked up to be. Mm. That even after that stage of getting that record deal or that publishing deal, they still could be at the same sort of position they were beforehand.
Yeah, the publishing company is still not really doing anything to promote them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think the one good thing that the self-publishing industry allows for, or that the change has allowed for, is that the publishers have to pick up their game, right? Because people have that option of self-publishing or doing kind of a combination. There are all sorts of different varieties to the model now that were not there 10, 15 years ago. And it's really exciting because of that. And it's funny, so even the big artists, like even the musician Prince, he was like one of the first people to break away from publishers. Well, in the music industry, they're not publishers. What are they called?
Record labels. Yeah.
Right. So even he broke away from that and he set up his own website and people would have a monthly fee and get access to all his new music because he's always creating stuff. So he was one of the first to do that because he always felt he was being unfairly taken advantage of by record labels. And so he kind of started the movement there. We have entrepreneurs like Seth Godin, who writes lots of books and has a team of people, and they self-publish and they do really well that way. So it's a really interesting change in the environment of what's happening in terms of publishing. And I think it gives us more choice, but it also gives us a reality check on we have to be responsible for our own success.
Yeah, that's right. And I think like anything in business, especially when these changes occur, it's no good to just sort of sit around and whinge about them or, you know, say, oh, how terrible is all of this? You've got to adapt. You've got to be able to change the way you do things. And ultimately that ends up better for both the artist and the people who are consuming their work.
Yeah, at the end of the day, what people really follow is not the piece of work, but the artist. Yeah. And if the artist can provide value to his or her audience, that's how you build a fan base. And I think that's really the key to it. And so self-publishing is an option, which maybe you can then spend some of your money on other resources you wouldn't be able to if you had gone down a traditional publishing route. So they all have their advantages and minuses. But I guess at the end of the day, it's really just doing your homework and always understanding that no matter what course of action you take, you still have to do everything you can to promote yourself and your work. Well, I think that's a great lead-in to our interview. Now, before we get to the interview, of course, we have to talk about today's priming question. So what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to also remind you that after the interview, I'm going to reveal my how to find the right training in terms of a business model around your passions, which is really going to help you focus in on what's something you're passionate about and potentially can build a business from, potentially can write a book about or create content about. So that's going to be really fun. But let's first talk about today's priming question. And the question is, what could I do to get the right training around my area of interest and develop a workable business model around it? I'll say it again. What could I do to get the right training around my area of interest and develop a workable business model around it? Now, if you're unsure about how to answer this so far, that's okay. Just write whatever comes to mind right now and more answers will come to you naturally as we go through the content of today's show. If you have the ability to pause the show at the moment, if you're listening to a recording, by all means do that. Write down your answers to that question and then continue along. So now it's time for our interview with Eve Adamson. Here it is.
Hello and welcome. I'm Alex Sobanowski, founder of FulfillingHappiness.com. And today my guest is Eve Adamson, who is a New York Times best-selling author and freelance writer who has written or co-authored over 50 books and hundreds of magazine articles on subjects as varied as yoga, stress management, Zen, healthy diets, cooking, holistic health, chakra exploration, dream interpretation, animal companion care, and green living. So quite a lot. Celebrities and experts hire her to help them write their books. And Eve has the unique gift of hearing a client, knowing who the person is, and translating what they say into the book of their dreams. A serious student of yoga and meditation, Eve believes that experiencing the journey of another is a way to experience the self. So first of all, welcome, Eve.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It sounds like quite a bio, so you obviously have quite a lot of experience writing your own books and others, and so it's great to have you on board.
Thank you. I have a lot of experience now after many years. It wasn't always that way, but yes.
Fantastic. So let's get straight to it. Eve, what was the thought process behind the best life-changing decision you have ever made?
Well, the decision was, choosing the decision to discuss with you is easy, and that decision was, back at the beginning of my career, could I do it? Could I quit all sensible, regular employment with its paychecks and benefits, insurance, all those things, and be a freelance writer? Could I do that? Could I actually step out of the cubicle in the working world and work for myself and actually make that work? And at the time, that was a terrifying prospect. And I get a lot of people who call and ask me about this very question because they want to do it, but they're afraid. It was a big decision. And so I thought I'd tell you how I made that decision. I had always wanted to be a writer. And when I was a child, I would write stories all the time and construct books and even write melodramatic little novellas to exercise my teenage angst. And then I went on to college and I was an English major, and then I went on to graduate school and got a master's of fine arts in creative writing. But once I was out in the world, I was unsure of how to proceed, and the only thing I really knew how to do that I thought was marketable was type very quickly. So I was working as a word processor in an office for a doctor, transcribing his clinic notes at a fast clip, and really not writing at all. And like many people who get out of writing programs, just wasn't sure what to do. I knew I needed to pay the bills. I knew I needed to make a living. But then I had a baby, and that was the first step towards changing everything because it changed my mindset. Suddenly, putting a child into daycare for 10 hours a day while I worked in a cubicle at a job I didn't love was no longer a viable option. You know, it was one thing to compromise my own dreams for a paycheck, but suddenly the landscape had changed. So that was my first clue that maybe there was another option for me. So I started to look into the options. And I had always heard of freelance writing. And it always seemed like something impossible. I didn't know anyone who did it. I couldn't imagine how it was done. But once I had that baby in my arms, I thought, well, what if I could do that? What if I could work at home? Now, I had an MFA in poetry writing, which is much different than making a living at writing. Obviously, poetry is not the most lucrative type of writing out there.
Really? I didn't know.
Yeah. But I thought, you know, I wrote a lot of papers in English. I wrote essays. I know how to write. I'm trained in writing. Maybe I could try this. But I was terrified because there was no regular paycheck. There was no guarantee. And while I was married at the time, and there wasn't a second income, which made it a little easier, I was still afraid because I had always kind of been the primary wage earner. And yet there was that baby, and I thought, you know what, I think I'm going to try this. Now, this is kind of the first part. It wasn't the really big part of the decision. I started to do it, and I met with some modest success after a year or two. And just as I was kind of starting to get some regular assignments and do it, I got divorced. And suddenly the game changed again. There was no second income. I had had a second baby, and it was me and these two small children. And then I felt myself at the edge of this metaphorical cliff. And I thought I could step back into safety. I could get a regular job with insurance and all of those things. Or I could jump and hope that I could quickly learn to fly on the way down. And it was terrifying. But my thought process was this. First of all, number one, I had the training. I knew how to write. I knew that I was schooled in it. I knew I was good at it. I had confidence in my ability to write well. Number two, I had the motivation. I still wanted to be home with these children. I wanted to raise them myself. And I had never had a lot of success having a boss over me telling me what to do. I've always been a little more comfortable telling myself what to do. So I had the training and I had the motivation. But my big problem was, did I have the guts? Did I have the guts to do it? Now, a lot of people have asked me, well, did you have a backup plan? Did you have a job you did on the side just in case for that extra money? Did you have a job waiting for you just in case it didn't work out? And that was my decision. This was the big question. What if I purposely did not have a backup plan? Because if I did not have a backup plan, I would have to make this work. I would have to make my dream work. I would have no choice. And it took me a couple weeks of deliberation, but I finally decided, you know what, I'm going to do it. I'm going to jump. I have the skills. All I have to do is jump. And without a backup plan, I will have to make it work. And I think because I put that pressure on myself, it generated enough energy internally within me to make it work.
Wow. Okay. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm just going to burn the bridges, so I have no other choice than to make this work.
Dream that I thought was so impossible. There was so much competition out there. And once you get to that point where you know you're good at something and you have the guts to go, well, you realize there isn't that much competition. Most people don't get to that level. Most people don't jump. So once you've jumped, the field is fairly clear out there, and you've got a lot of room to fly. And so it happened for me. And like I said, I knew no one else who had done this. I figured it all out on myself and it by myself. But it was knowing I had that training behind me, and then having that courage to just, I'm going to jump without a backup plan, that made that decision possible. And so I did it, and I've never looked back. There were always those moments when I didn't know where the next check would come from, and I thought, did I make a terrible mistake? But to give in to that fear, and I always pushed through the fear, and it always worked itself out. It's been completely worth that risk, because I refused to give in and have that backup plan, and I made a successful and somewhat rare career for myself, I think, because I made that decision.
Wonderful. So there's a couple things I just want to mention. So first thing you said is that you kind of raised your standards. By having a child, you felt that even if you don't deserve more, or you felt that at the time, you felt that they deserved more. Would that be true?
Well, I thought they deserved me.
Yeah.
You know, they deserved to have me with them. They deserved to have their mother at home with them. And so, yes, I wanted them to have the life I knew was right for them. And so that was a huge, that the passion generated from that feeling was a huge motivation in even helping me to see that this decision existed in the first place.
Wow. Okay. So finally, what advice would you give to someone else who finds himself in a similar position that you were in?
Well, and I have a lot of people come and ask me that and say that they are in this situation. One of the reasons I wanted to emphasize that I had the training first was because a lot of people want to freelance or start their own business because they have this idea of it, this romanticized idea of it. You have to have the training part first behind you. If you want, for instance, in my case, if you want to be a writer, you have to know how to write. It's a skill that you have to learn, and it takes a lot of practice. And so you have to have that part behind you. But if you know that you have that, if you know you're good at the thing you want to do, then it really takes the courage. You have to be willing to step out on that ledge and go for it. Because if you do have that backup plan, it's so easy when things get tough to just fall back and say, oh, this is too stressful, I'm just going to go back to this other job. But if that's not there, then that's what forces you to push through and make it work for yourself. Otherwise, so many people, I can't tell you how many hundreds of people I know who have given up and gone back to the safety of their backup plan because it was too scary. And if you don't have that that lack of a security, of a safety net behind you, you have to keep going forward. And that's how you become successful beyond what's normal. That's how you reach that dream that most people never reach.
Wow, that's fantastic. So thank you so much, Eve. Where can people find out more about you?
You can go to my website. It's www.eveadamson.com. I'm often updating it. It has a lot of the books I've published on there and written for other people and some of the articles, and it's a bit under construction, but I keep adding more to it as I keep doing more things.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. What a great interview. So first of all, James, what do you take away from Eve's advice?
Oh, wow. This is a really inspirational interview. This idea of the backup plan that she was talking about is really interesting, because in a way the backup plan is kind of a myth or a misnomer, really. You can't really have a backup plan and do what you really want to truly do. I mean, the whole idea of the backup plan existing in the first place, there seems to be an element of, well, this other thing might fail, so, you know, I can always just fall back on this other thing that's more commonly accepted as something that I'll have security in. And it seems to be a really common theme in these interviews. Well, of course, I mean, it's, you know, talking about destiny-defining decisions. But there's always this sort of leap of faith that the people you've interviewed talk about, where they've really had to just do something and push through the fear, as I think Eve said there, and, you know, really be able to pursue what they truly are passionate about.
Yeah, the backup plan is an interesting thing. I agree that we need to be committed. We need to be committed. I don't think we have to burn all our bridges, though. I think I know a lot of different writers, for example, that have gone successful. They commit to the dream wholeheartedly for X amount of time. So, for instance, I know Dean Koontz, the writer, when he was just establishing himself and he just got married. And I think he agreed with his wife that he would do this thing, full commitment, for 5 years. And if he wasn't successful in 5 years, she would support him fully for 5 years. And if he wasn't successful in 5 years, well, then it's not going to work and they're going to have to go and do something else. But yeah, for those 5 years, that's all he did. And fortunately for him, it didn't take that long and they were fine. And I think that's important. We have to commit, but we have to commit for a certain time period, I think, is useful. Like, and the other thing we have to do, for Eve, it was a tougher thing than for some people, or perhaps easier actually, is she didn't have anyone to have to please in return. You know, she was divorced, so this was all up to her. So on one hand, that makes it more difficult because she has no home support. On the other hand, it makes it easier potentially if you have a partner who does not believe in what you're doing. And I think that's a crucial element of this puzzle, which is, one, you've got to be committed. And I think you've got to be committed for at least a certain period of time, fully committed. Or the other thing is, if you do have a partner, they've got to be on board, or it's going to be extremely difficult to pursue this. And this is the, I think this is one of the hardest issues that a budding entrepreneur faces, is that their support network, especially the support network closest to them, i.e. partner, aren't as supportive as they could be. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. Definitely. I mean, that is a huge factor. I think if the partner's not supportive, and then, you know, there's a huge amount of doubt there, because I mean, there's such, they've got so much invested in that relationship, that if both aren't on board, then it's going to be hugely difficult for the budding entrepreneur to pursue that. And you know, if they want to be able to do it, then they're really going to have to consider, is this relationship a good influence or a bad influence?
Yeah, it's a tough one, because also at the end of the day, I know from my perspective, you don't want to be influencing your partner in a way where they live inauthentically, because it'll come back to bite you.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's really important. So as I said, I think the key is you've got to be committed. And you've, the other thing she said, which I think is really important, is you've got to have your skills down. And that's kind of why I'm going to introduce a process just in just a few minutes. Because there's the other idea of, oh yeah, I just want to go do this thing. And you have no idea what you're doing. And you have no idea of the importance of taking your time and of understanding that skills need time to develop. And that we can achieve great things with a good time frame in mind. And this goes back to one of our previous shows with Tom Butler Bowden. And he says, you know, the 10-year rule, which is give yourself time to really know, understand, immerse yourself in this new skill, in this new industry. Now, at the same time, you burn your bridges, but you still have to support yourself as well. Now, Eve had the advantage of she had her skills down. So she just had to potentially find the right contacts. Well, if you don't have your skills down, you've still got to pay the bills. And I think this is where some people can go too far in the other direction. So I always say, follow your dreams, but cover your responsibilities. And have your skill and know where your skills are in the grand scheme of things as well. Because I think that's really important. So I think what we're going to do now is actually move on to our next segment. Now, before we get into our next segment, as I said, just once again, if you want to find out more about Eve, you can go to eveadamson.com and head over there if you want more information. So today's show, it's really focusing on passion and developing and inspiring your purpose through that passion. And both passion and purpose are pillars of my Fulfilling Happiness Positivity Pillars model. And if you want to get some really cool, interesting stuff around the positivity pillars that I base my work around, you can go to fulfillinghappiness.com/posters. And on that page, I've got some really cool motivational posters. And I have strategies, techniques connected to each poster. And you're welcome to print them out put them in self-development folders. Do whatever you want. Something fun and something for you to keep you inspired, something different. Now, time to reveal my how to find the right training to build a business model around your passions. That's really the process I want to talk about because, okay, we want to go do something amazing. How do we get started? That's a really important question. So Eve already had the training in her field, but what if you don't have that training? What if you need to know how to learn what it takes to get that training or even learn how to operate a business? So I thought I would help you in order to assist you in finding that way. And so this is a simple and powerful 4-step process to help you cultivate your passion in the right way. Because if you want to enter into a new discipline, what is the best way to get skilled? There are the classic examples of either working for a company that will train you in a certain area or finding a formal educational course. However, what if those classic options are not suitable? Unlike being a doctor, lawyer, psychologist, and other classic professions, you are not required to have a degree to be an entrepreneur. Most passions in life do not require a formal education, which on the one hand is great because you don't have to spend tens of thousands of dollars you may not have and years of your time getting qualified. On the other hand, you still need to get quality training and direction. And the internet, like most things in life, is both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because you can find quality training programs in just about any area of business and life. It's a curse because for every one quality program, course, or trainer, there's going to be at least 10 horribly misleading, overhyped, and inaccurate programs that will actually set you back further than when you started. So here is a process to help you discover how to turn a professional interest or personal passion into a workable business model. There are no miracles promised here. Success will still take time, dedication, discipline, effort, and opportunity capitalization. This process is designed to get you connected to the right information or people that can help you find success over time. Now, at any point during this process, feel free to pause the show and actually practice the process. As I said, you go through these processes pretty quickly. So what you want to do is have a recording of the show, pause it, and go through this process. Here we go. Step one is brainstorm and select. Write down a list of your personal and professional interests. Then choose the one thing you would like to learn about and or learn how to turn into a business. So there's two components. Either one thing you want to learn about, more about, or how to learn more about how to turn your passion into a business. Two, research. Go to your preferred internet search engine and type in key phrases related to your area. Examples are how to make money doing X. Example, selling recipes. How to become a successful X, whatever that thing is. How to make money by being an expert on X. Who are the best leaders at X? Training courses in X. So you just want to do a nice big search around your area of interest or how to turn your passion into a business. Those are the two components of this exercise. You can do one or both, depending on what stage you're at. Number three, sifting and culling. Gather the top 10 to 20 applicable search results for each key phrase. And before purchasing anything, examine all the free information across all the categories. Be aware that much of it may be of poor quality, which is why you need to look at all of it. Then look at the biographies and successes about the person or company who has created the information. Cull mercilessly and create a short list of potential programs. Four. Decide on the best fit. Choose only one program and commit to completing it fully before considering anything else. Look for the program or the person that best complements your values, ideas, beliefs, and budget. Be realistic with your budget. Don't just go for the cheapest or the most expensive option. Balance all the factors, especially the credibility of the program. Now, an additional point is to be safe. Whatever time frame or cost is associated with success in this, triple it. Very important. Your budget's always going to blow out. If your budget doesn't blow out, fantastic. If it does blow out, you're ready for it just in case. So triple it. Now, if you really want local, hands-on, or one-on-one training, just go through the exact same process I just mentioned. Pause the recording of this show. Go back. Go through it again if you need to. And just click on local search options on your internet search or add the name of your town in your key phrase searches. There we are. So now we're coming towards the end of today's show, but I'd like to get through a couple more of the fun segments before we finish off. So first of all, Maestro, let's begin with fantasy gifts. Now, as you may know by now, I like to give away a lot of fantastic self-development gifts for supporters of this show. But I also want to play with the big boys and girls. I want to give away stuff the way Oprah Winfrey, Ellen DeGeneres, and even Dr. Phil gives away stuff. Except that there's one little problem. I don't have a budget or any corporate sponsors. So rather than being limited by the constraints of the real world and admit to the fact that I am not an all-powerful media mogul, I will use my imagination and give you a fantasy gift far superior to anything Oprah, Ellen, Dr. Phil, or anyone else could ever dream of. So here's today's fantasy gift. So many of us dream of being best-selling authors. But who wants to write? Being cooped up in a room all by yourself with nothing but you and the blank page? Could you imagine anything more depressing? You know you're brilliant. You know there is so much untapped potential burning inside of your unconscious mind, begging to come out. Well, now it can. The Autowriter gloves are the perfect fit for your creative process. Designed by members of the once secret, now defected New York Times Science and Narrative Propaganda Division, these gloves are guaranteed to guide you in writing your bestseller with no effort. In fact, you don't even need to be awake. Just put a keyboard on your lap as you go to sleep and let the soothing sounds of computer keys lull you to sleep whilst your fingers and unconscious mind takes care of the rest. Imagine the smile on your face as you awaken every morning with another high-quality chapter completed and ready to go to the printers. It's time to show the world what you can do. Do not let any lack of writing skill, talent, or knowledge interfere with your dreams. Your unconscious will provide the raw material and the Autowriter will take care of the rest. Order your set of gloves now. blue for self-development, red for business, white for fiction, and a range of others for every type of writing you need. Becoming an internationally renowned expert leader in your field has never been so easy. And everyone who purchases these will also receive the just released Auto PR phone system, giving you direct phone access to all the producers of all the biggest shows. Get ready to get more publicity than a presidential sex scandal guaranteed. The world is at your fingertips. And every fan of this show will be going home with their very own set of Autorider gloves. Just look under your chair. They're right there. Congratulations, the Autorider gloves. Write your story today. Okay, now that we have your fantasy gift, you've got it, use it, enjoy it. Let's get into this week's real self-development experiment. It's time for the challenge.
Challenge of the week.
Challenge of the week. This week's challenge is to choose one interest, hobby, or area where you need or would like more training in, and go through the how to find the right training and build a business model around your passions process. That's the process we went through before. So use it. That's the challenge of the week. No additional challenge for this week. That in itself will keep you quite busy. Now, if you want to get in contact with us, follow us, that sort of thing, you can use Twitter, Facebook, all those kind of things. And just to get you inspired to do that, James. Oh, that's fantastic. James, you enjoy the guitar in that, don't you? That's some of your best work.
What gave you that idea?
That's some of your best work. I also saw a little bit of Wiggles. Were you doing a little bit of finger action from the Wiggles there during our little dance-off?
I'll tell you about that later.
Oh, okay. It's something else. It's something secret. It's too secret to actually reveal on air. I like it. So, now, if you want to send me some feedback for the show, obviously, Facebook, Twitter, you can also email us at fulfillinghappiness.com/contact. Post a message on the wall. It's facebook.com/fulfillinghappiness. Now, as I said, on the website, there's lots of things for you to enjoy. There's links to potential products. And of course, just to make it fun and to really get you excited about potentially purchasing some products, James.
Buy my stuff right now.
That really is my worst singing one that we do, isn't it? It's really bad. Like, and that's the most important one.
Why do you sabotage yourself?
I know. It's this horrible lack of self-esteem that I have. It's horrible. I'm a giant fraud, people. A giant fraud. All right. Never mind. So let's move on. Now, what I would like to do is to finish the show is talk about my special guest interview next week. And my special guest interview will be with Tom Butler Bowden. He's the best-selling author of 50 self-help classics, the first guide to the personal development literature. The book was followed by 50 success classics, 50 spiritual classics, 50 psychology classics, and 50 prosperity classics. The series has been published in 21 languages and is sold in over 30 countries. So that is something to look out for. And of course, if you want to listen to any of my previous shows with all the wonderful guests and so forth, just head over to happinessedge.com and you can download all the previous shows and enjoy the interviews, enjoy our songs, go through the techniques and so forth. Before we wrap up, let's go back to the priming question. Once again, what could I do to get the right training around my area of interest and develop a workable business model around it? So pause the show if you're able to, if it's a recording, and answer that question now. Now that you've gone through all these processes, your mind should be racing with ideas. Write them all down, enjoy it, and get out there and start following your passions. Now, I want to thank my guests. Of course, I want to thank Eve Adamson. I want to thank the maestro himself, majorkeystomusic.com, James Love. And of course, there's someone else I'm forgetting, and that's me. I should thank me because I'm working hard here. So my name is Alex George Sobanoski from fulfillinghappiness.com. Get out there, live with total power, true passion, transformational purpose.